Tom Cruise.
Kevin, did you know he's credited with saving the sunglasses company Ray-Ban because of
Top Gun?
Him?
No, they were aviators.
Risky Business.
Oh, Risky Business, of course.
Yeah. So Ray-Ban were in a serious slump and he was credited with their renewed popularity.
He didn't save the wavefront.
I'll use small words that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
What did you say?
You are a sad, strange little man.
Don't call me stupid.
Hello, and welcome to The Best Bits, a movie podcast where each week we pick our favourite scenes from randomly selected, weirdly specific themes. This is your co-host, Will, a writer of three films plus a Christmas special, and I'm joined once again by our co-host and writer of one and a bit films and three and a bit episodes of TV, Kevin. Kevin, hello.
Hello, Will.
How are you?
To feel a bit insecure about you having three films and me having just one.
I propose that each week we completely fictionalize it and we start changing it up.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I'm going to change yours to and writer of a harshly worded mailbag letter to Mike Murphy back in the 80s about an episode of Garda
Writer
Patrol.
Of the upcoming Mission Impossible film.
Yes.
Can we get sued for that?
Kevin, should we... What are we doing? What's this whole podcast thing about?
So, this is The Best Bits, where we basically pick out our favourite scenes from specific topics, and the topics are sort of randomly generated. We've got a big wheel, we spin the wheel, and whatever it lands on, whether it's best cameo scene, best ad-libbed scene, there's so many, there's 300 in there. We keep adding to it, we keep sort of coming up with new ideas, and it's just sort of a way for us to have a think about these topics and have a laugh and sort of see if we can pick our favourites. They're not the best. The best is sort of like shorthand, but it's our most liked scenes. And that's essentially what the podcast is. Last week I did, I got chase scenes and I turned that into car chase scenes and then rescue scenes. And this week we are doing, well, Will is going to do, Tom Cruise run scenes. So it's all the times that Tom Cruise has done a legger in a film. And that's a lot of films.
That's a lot of films. It is 41 or 42 films. Imagine that. Well, no, you know, we'll get into the technicalities now in a few minutes. But yeah, I reciprocate everything Kevin is saying there. I second it and think we should take it to the Senate floor.
Take it to the Dáil.
Take it to the Dáil and we're going to vote it and make it a law. But yeah, it's great. I enjoy this because it's a lovely way to look at the films that we enjoy through a different lens and do a little bit of research and be able to revisit some films as well, which I found I've started to do because in my growing age, I find myself less and less likely to revisit films. And so this has given me a great excuse to do so. And I'm happy
about it. It's homework. But also there's hundreds of movie podcasts out there, and this is sort of a bite-sized version of that. It's a way for us to sort of talk about lots of films at once and sort of spin it into a story about where we're going and what our thought process is and lead the other person on the garden path. I have no idea what Will has cooked up for this episode. But I'm fascinated to hear what you are planning. So will we get into it?
Let's get into Tom Cruise running.
Let's get into it.
Kevin, here we are.
Yes. Here we are.
We're back in the main in the main segment of the show. And now we are coming. I got the big wheel spin last week. And I got... Tom Cruise run.
As fast as you can.
You want to know something? That's a good segue. There's a lot of information about Tom Cruise running in films. And a lot of it comes from Reddit, which is a very reliable source of information. And some fella on Reddit has looked at the film Mission Impossible 3 and figured out exactly what speed Tom Cruise runs at full.
Oh my god, this is going to be great. Go on.
Yeah.
45 miles an hour, faster than a cheetah.
Well, I'll give you a bit of a... So when I heard this, I went, oh my god, he's the fastest man on earth. So he in the film Mission Impossible 3, when he's running like hell for leather in this kind of ancient Chinese city, he clocks in at 24.6 kilometers per hour, which is, I think it's about 14.
That's about the speed that I reverse and park.
And I saw it because I've been on the treadmill a few times, and I can see what the old speedometer is saying on the treadmill when I'm running. And let me say, it would be for Tom a slow, a slow slope or a slow loiter. what I jog at when I'm on the treadmill. So I thought, Jesus, 24.6 kilometers an hour. He's the fastest man on the planet. When I looked up what Usain Bolt does, he basically, Usain Bolt goes over 40 kilometres an hour, so he's not quite at Usain Bolt. But he does, so that would equate...
He's also half the height of Usain Bolt, so, you know, the legs are going at triple speed.
Triple speed, yeah. Well, now there you go. They basically, Usain Bolt, he does, famously, in the Olympics, there's the 100-metre dash or race or sprint, whatever they call it.
100-metre dash.
What do they call it? Do they call it a race or a sprint?
That's when they used to give out sashes, I think. The 100-metre dash. bowling shoes.
on gravel paths, on bowling shoes.
khaki pants.
while smoking a pack of Woodbines. So Tom Cruise would do the 100-metre dash in 14.6 seconds.
That is fast.
And he was 43 years old when he did that, when he shot that scene. Like, that's fairly fast, isn't it?
My knees hurt now, so... I don't think I'd be able to do that at 43.
Yeah. As I said to you, I embarrassingly know where my limits are thanks
to
the treadmill.
Go on, tell me.
I'm not telling you a podcast because it's, let's just say, I'm proud of myself when I get to double digits.
Do you use both legs?
No, it's just, I prefer to go, I do my 100 meter skip. That's what I do. But hey, Tom Cruise, right? Tom Cruise running scenes. A very interesting topic because it's so specific. I found a really fun article on Rotten Tomatoes, an editorial written by Mark Hoffmeyer. That's his name, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Oh, I know Mark. How is he?
Mark's really good. He was asking for you, as a matter of fact.
That's nice.
Yeah. He's just like, he hasn't been on Twitter in a while, and he's just taking a break. So he's really. But you know what Mark did? He came up with this really interesting. He did an awful lot of the legwork for me, and I'm using this his editorial as a basis of my segment. And the title of
this is you cogging your homework.
Yes, this is me rocking up to school.
But isn't that just everything? Like, nobody has first-hand information or anything. It's all about sort of your sources and citing them. So, yeah.
And I was literally going to do this type of... What wonderful Mark did in his editorial, I was going to do it, and I discovered that Mark's already done it. So I'm going to cite Mark and say, thanks, Mark. He wrote this really good and useful article, which is titled this, "The More Tom Cruise Runs, The Better His Movies Are. A tomato meter deep dive."
That's a controversial topic. That's a controversial statement.
He backs it up with facts. He backs it up with facts, right? So listen to this, right? So he did his homework here, right? So I have another trivia question for you, right? In what films has Tom Cruise not run at all? Like 0 feet running. Which he's walked, but 0 feet running.
Lions for Lambs.
Correct. There are three more. There's three more.
Oh, three more.
But that's a very good, very good. Out of 40-something, that's very good. Well done.
The Outsiders?
Incorrect.
He ran in The Outsiders?
He did.
Okay. From a mirror.
Before those braces kicked in.
Okay, let me think. So, there's a big demarcation in Cruise's career from Lions, I've forgotten what the title is, Lions to Lambs or Lions and Lambs?
Lions for Lambs.
Lions for Lambs.
Came, yeah.
Between his career pre-Lions for Lambs mm-hmm. and post-Lions for Lambs.
Yeah.
He was doing a lot more dramatic. Do you know what? Has he run in Top Gun?
He has. But he's not very...
Beach ball scene?
Yeah, there's jogging, there's short sprints. That's in a short sprints category. Yep, he's done under 500 feet in Top Gun. Yeah, definitely. No, it could be, but he has run.
The Tropic Thunder?
Correct. So you're on two. There's two more. But you're doing really well. I'll give you a hint. One of the other films, also Tropic Thunder, Lions for Lambs came out in 2007. Tropic Thunder came out in 2008. And one of these other films that he doesn't run in, which I was very surprised.
It's going to be that musical one, isn't it? Rock of Ages.
No, he's running in that. He's running in that.
Mm-hmm. I never saw it.
Or like he's like at least running around the stage, you know,
that's not running. That's like in lockdown saying I went for a run. I just ran to the fridge.
Well, I'm saying this. I'm saying this. I'm trying to qualify it, but I've never seen that Rock of Ages, so I have no idea. I'm just using Max.
But although I hear it's amazing.
The other film that came out in 2008, and I was really shocked when I saw this one. I was like, what? He doesn't run in that film?
Well, as we know from last week, he runs in Born on the 4th of July, where he spends the majority of the film in a wheelchair. So
yeah, he does run in that one, yeah.
I don't know. I give up. Tell me.
It's Valkyrie. He doesn't run in Valkyrie. Imagine that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even when he's been, like, he's...
Well, he's only got one eye, so I suppose he's be falling all over the place.
I think one eye doesn't stop you from running.
Yes, I take that back. That's me being facetious, but I don't know.
And come here, do you know what the last one was?
I've often run blind drunk, so I assume that you can run quite capably with one eye when sober.
And come here, the last one, which I was shocked by, was Magnolia. 1999's Magnolia. He doesn't run in that.
See, that's when he was doing dramatic roles, and you don't really have a reason to... that's strange, though, because in that he keeps screaming to respect the cock, and, you know, he doesn't go off half-cocked in that film. That's surprising.
But Merrick actually makes a really interesting data observation here, which is that the less Tom Cruise runs, the least successful his films are, because... If you think about it, it makes sense because zero running means little action. And that means it's not a blockbustery type of film. But also, weirdly enough, if we're going to go by the Rotten Tomatoes average rating, the average rating of his no running films are actually the lowest. It's so strange. They're at 63.5% or something like that. It's a very strange one.
Audience are treating Tom Cruise like Dance Monkey Dance. That's this topic should be called. Not Run Tom Cruise Run, it should be Dance Monkey Dance.
But like then like he breaks it down to basically Tom runs in films like he runs a distance from like 1 foot to 500 feet. And there's like a whole series of films like, you know, Top Gun and Rock of Ages is in there and Jack Reacher, American Made, Rain Man and stuff like that. And those films, they've done collectively the box office of those films. They say the collective box office of the films in which doesn't run at all was 153 million, right? That's inflated international box office a whole lot. And then for the films in which he's run a distance of 1 foot to 500 feet, the inflated international box office of those films is 295 million, right? It's just mad.
People are
going
to kill Tom. He's just going to drive him to just keep running and running and running.
Yeah. So the middle distance films that he's run, so that's a distance of 501 feet to 1,000 feet. There's not so many, there's like about, there's only about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 8 of his films in which he's done this. That includes the first Mission Impossible, the first two Mission Impossible films. And the collective box office success of those films was 411 million, right? That includes, you remember, Collateral, All the Right yeah. Moves as well, and Oblivion, and Night and Day, EU. And so he makes more money the more he runs. Now, but hey, I want to bring you to the culmination of Mark's incredibly intensively researched...
I love Mark. Mark is great.
And I have to double check, is it Mark or Matt? is it Mark? Hold on.
It's Mark.
Sorry, Mark. But Mark, and I love
this. I
haven't
seen him in years, but you know, that's how it goes. In lockdown anyway.
But listen, Mark actually, and like this is really, the numbers don't lie, for, like the numbers speak for themselves in this. So, and the final category is when Tom goes full Tom, right? And that's when he
never
runs.
Never go full Tom.
He goes full Tom, and he's been going full Tom for 24 years now. And this is when he's run over 1,001 plus feet in a film, right? Now, he's running at full Tom. Let's call it full Tom, right?
He's also running at full Tom along rooftops and...
Yeah. And shattering limbs and doing all this sort of stuff. So listen to the numbers about Tom Cruise and the films in which he's run over 1,001 plus feet. Now, 1,001 plus feet have, as we've added up, equates to
a sixth of a mile.
Or 601 Tom Cruises lying down, head to tail, stacked on top of each other. That's how long it is.
Basically, that's like spending 2.5 minutes on a treadmill.
Yeah. But here, this is the weirdest thing about it, right? So in the films where Tom Cruise has run a long distance, they have been fantastically more successful commercially and critically, because the average tomato meter for those films is 71%, which is like 10% more than the previous category, the mid-distance. Full Tom is way better, is 10% better than mid-Tom. And financially, they made like 538 million, versus 411 on the mid-Tom.
Isn't he very successful?
He's very successful. Now, what I'm going to do now is, right, so I want to lead up, because we haven't got to my best bit.
I forgot what the show was about.
This is the whole idea of the show. We have to go to a best bit.
Oh, this is going to be good.
Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a top five, right? As in distance-wise. This is all distance, right? And it leads up to my favorite one, or my best scene. So number one is like the scene I'm picking, okay? So
is this
going to
have Mission Impossible music? I hope it does.
You gotta wait and see. at number five, it's Minority Report, in which he runs 1,562 feet on camera. Okay. At number four is War of the Worlds, where
that's got a really good run scene.
At number three, at a distance of 3,066 feet, some of which was vertically down the side of the world's tallest building in Abu Dhabi.
Yep. Mission Impossible. These subtitles mixed up. Rogue Nation?
No. Not that one. Come on, try again. It's the other one. You have it. Staring at the tip of your tongue.
I can't remember.
Yeah. It's Ghost Protocol.
Ghost Protocol.
That's the one directed by Brad Bird. I really enjoyed that film.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it. Yeah. So at number two, it's running at a distance of 212 feet is Mission Impossible 3, directed by J.J. Abrams, which he runs a lot. There's a big sequence, big action sequence, where he's running across this bridge and it kind of culminates him with a missile kind of blowing off behind him. And I kind of found that, that for me was the kind of the film that rebooted the Mission Impossible franchise for me.
Definitely. Very similar to True Lies as well from last week.
Oh, true, yeah. True Lies. Yes, that's absolutely, you're right. But my best pick is Mission Impossible Fallout, aka Mission Impossible 6, in which he runs over 6,000 feet, which is almost double what he's done in the previous two films. It's unbelievable. And Kevin, what I want you to do is I want you to, you might watch that clip. Will you watch that clip with me? We'll do this, let's do this together. Do you want to watch the missile?
Will you hold my hand? Because I might get scared.
Yeah.
There's heights. I don't like the heights.
Have you seen this film recently? When's the last time you saw the film?
I saw it in the cinema and I saw it again last year. I thought it was...
Oh, okay.
It was a blast to watch. The Mission Impossible films just keep getting better and better and better for me. I'm really looking forward to the next one. But I thought it was a cracking, fun spy film.
You're absolutely right. I thought the first Mission Impossible film was fun, even though, despite it being directed by Brian Bama, and I wasn't such a fan of the John Woo one. But J.J. Abrams kind of, I thought the Mission Impossible 3 was kind of like it getting back on track. But then once for the fourth one, Brad Bird's one, Ghost Protocol, I really thought this series was becoming, for me, my kind of like replacement Bond series, where I went, this film is giving me all the things I want from a Bond film, which is practical stunts, rip-roaring action, a fairly compelling kind of lead, and it's fun. That's the one thing about these
films. It's Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise. A really compelling lead. I really like Tom Cruise.
Do you know what I like as well about the Mission Impossible films is that they finally done what they foregoed in the original, where, you know, in the original it begins with the team, the Impossible Missions team, all getting wiped out apart from Tom Cruise. And for the following two to three films,
Ving Rhames survived.
Aside from Ving Rhames who'd pop up. Mm-hmm. But now they've sort of built an actual team around him and it's become slightly more of an ensemble and I love that.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. And this this particular, the action sequence... The running sequence, it kind of follows on from your chase sequence last week, because they've just, what they did for Fallout was fairly spectacular. I rewatched it this weekend, kind of knowing, I knew that this was going to be the one, because I saw this film in the cinema and I remember audibly kind of gasping and going, oh Jesus, you know, and just going, I can't believe they're doing this. There's this set, and I rewatched it this weekend. And I was completely lost at times when it came to the plot. I genuinely didn't know what was happening, but I didn't care because I knew the basics. I knew what the filmmakers wanted me to know to kind of keep me engaged with the action, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Also, that spy stuff, you've got to give them a gimme, and that is that they're in a spy film, no one is 100% honest. There is always some sort of subterfuge and deception, and you just have to go with it for a lot of it. But I remember seeing that as well in the cinema, and I thought it was just such a blast. And because it was London as well, it was like it didn't feel... It felt more visceral, and you could just feel the pounding of the feet, because I've walked across those bridges, and cracking scene.
Yeah, the very brief synopsis for Mission Impossible Fallout is a group of terrorists plans to detonate three plutonium cores for a simultaneous nuclear attack on different cities. Ethan Hunt, along with his IMF team, sets out to stop the carnage. And that, I'd completely forgotten all of that. Like, I saw it whenever it came out in the cinemas. I've seen all these Mission Impossible films really once, I believe. So I saw them in the cinema and pretty much forgot about them until I saw the next one. All I remember was I had a lot of fun watching them. And so rewatching this film was, it was a real delight, because I had actually forgotten how much effort they put into the individual sequences and the stunt work in this film. It truly is breathtaking.
Do you know what? Last week we did car chases. And I said, and it sort of foreshadowed this whole episode, and we didn't know that it was going to come up, but I said Tom Cruise has crippled himself for a good foot chase, and I think it deserves its own episode. And yeah, it just occurred to me that we've done it. We've just done the foot chase, and I think it is one of the best foot chases I can think of in cinema history. And he crippled himself to do it.
Yeah. He literally, if you watch, it's unbelievable. Well, there's a couple of things I want to commend in this sequence. First of all, it's the filmmaking of it, right? First of all, and I actually have a whole aside I want to do about Christopher McQuarrie, because I think it plays into this topic as well. And there's, anyway, it's a story I have to tell because it's really compelling. But sticking with this sequence alone, first of all, we see Tom, he's in pursuit. First of all, it's very clear. Right, the geography of the sequence is very, very clear, and even the momentum across the action is always happening in a very clear geometry on the frame. So the pursuit in this case is Tom is chasing after Henry Cavill, who's like this rogue CIA agent, or he's a double agent effectively. But the action's all there. Henry Cavill is moving from left of screen to right, and Tom is always running from left to right, depending on where the camera's positioned.
But you always know
they don't cross the line, never cross the line. But also, there's this really clever, subtle staging of when they're framing each other, they use the physical landmarks of London, like the Tower of St. Paul's Cathedral, they literally will match the shots so that you can see from one shot with Tom running literally on top of St. Paul's Cathedral with the dome right behind him. They will match that shot with the dome, like far in the distance with Henry Cavill, just to kind of like it give the geography in your mind of how far they are from each other, the relative distance to each other. So it's incredibly cleverly done. And not only that, they have the comic sidekick of Simon Pegg, who is giving a kind of almost a running commentary using his little GPS kind of mapper.
What are you waiting for?
I'm jumping out a window!
What do you mean you're jumping out of a...
Oh, sorry, I had it in 2D. Good luck.
So the comedy in this is the first time we actually have kind of comedic breaks in any of Tom Cruise's runs as well, because Tom's looking at this window.
Oh, he's never had funny runs until this one.
Never had. This why this run has got, it's got tension. Now, the form of tension is, first of all, the pursuit is clear. I've got to get this Henry Cavill guy. Also, there's the tension of him leaping across these gaps in the buildings. And as
it's
an audience...
It's like a parkour scene, isn't it? It's like free running.
It's
almost
a parkour scene. It's unbelievable.
Didn't
we know
they
that
also break... Once he broke his ankle, I remember seeing him on the Graham Norton show, and they had to take... Was it, how many months off did they have to take? So it's a chase
six
that
months,
was filmed over.
6 months.
6 months, there you go. It's a 6 month long chase sequence.
It's unbelievable because it's unbelievable because that shot, the suspense they build is that he makes three leaps. In storytelling, you know, there's a rule of threes. It's an organic thing. And the first the score kind of plays with our expectations, because as an audience going into the cinema, we all knew the story that Tom breaks his leg on one of these jumps. So, like, the score kind of like kind of goes, it kind of like almost gasps on the first jump, and you go, "Oh no, that's not it." It was like a little like, "Oh, was that it?" It kind of like plays with you, and then there's a second jump, and you can hear the actual score just being like an intake of the score just evaporates just for a moment. And then we know there's the big run-up, and it's a really lovely... It's not a Steadicam shot. There's a drone shot that follows Tom running at full Tom along this kind of construction kind of gangplank, which, leads to him leaping over the chasm. He literally did it. He leaped over this gap between these buildings, which are maybe four or five stories. I'd say five stories. Like, dude, this stunt, like, and the stunt required for him not to make the jump. Like, they had planned for him to kind of like leap one safety harness holding onto him from above, but the stunt was for him not to make the jump, to grab onto the building and pull himself up. But he literally, you can see it. Oh God, it's they cut. They don't use the most graphic angle. What's truly impressive, like, and this is just like the first act of it, is the dude snaps his ankle, right, and he pulls himself up and he hobbles off camera because he knew. Like he, well, this is what he said on Graham Norton that time. He said he knew when he hit that it was gone, and he knew that the whole shoot was going to close down. So he pulled himself up and just went off camera. And even still, that every shot is about clarifying the geography, clarifying the positioning of the characters in the scene, in the sequence, in the chase. So when you see Henry Cavill approaching the Tate Modern, they have seconds before Tom Cruise. When Tom Cruise reaches that same point, they have an absolutely identically framed shot, you know, clarifying that this, you know where they are because of the filmmaking, the framing, the editing. The editing is hugely impressive in this as well. And what's great about this is that it comes, Tom finally, you know, the pursuit starts, which, you know, Tom's chasing Henry Cavill, and we're wondering, is he going to get to him? And eventually, you know, Henry Cavill goes into the Tate Modern in this kind of like freight elevator type, and Tom comes in, he jumps up, he grabs onto the underside of the freight elevator, and it's like, oh my God, he's now dangling underside this freight elevator. He's like going, okay, I'm here holding on this, and he looks up and there's Henry Cavill looking down with him, just staring down into his face going, oh, where did you come from? And he pulls a gun. And it's like, oh God, no, Tom, what are you going to do?
I'm looking forward to seeing this film.
It's great. And Henry Cavill then basically presents, basically the chase ends with Henry Cavill kind of presenting a bit of information that flips the script on Tom Cruise, and it raises the stakes for the rest of the film. It makes the adventure, I suppose the drama, way more personal for Tom Cruise and the audience.
Does he mention his wife in that sequence?
He takes out a picture of her? He takes out, that's what he does. He just takes out a picture of his wife and he puts it on the floor of the grating. Tom Cruise is hanging, dangling on the underside of this freight elevator, looking, he's got a gun in one eyeball and a picture of his wife in the other eyeball, and you can feel his world dropping, all that energy just going from. So I love this Tom Cruise running scene.
Tom Cruise.
We're going to have to put it. We're going to have to find an audio clip drop it here. Yeah. So no one knows what we're talking about. It's from a kids program that we watched in Ireland from the Den. And anyway, we know it's specific. But this sequence kind of put me down a bit of a rabbit hole, right? And that rabbit hole was the writer and director of this film, Christopher McQuarrie. Okay.
Oh, I know Christopher. He's a sound.
But you know, Christopher he's become kind of like the showrunner, the helmer of this last from Rogue Nation. I think he wrote Ghost Protocol. I'm not really sure, but he definitely has written and directed Rogue Nation.
He's become, you know, Tom Cruise's most trusted, you know, collaborator at this stage.
I was reminded of a brilliant interview I heard with Christopher McQuarrie from back in the day when he was promoting Valkyrie. And it was with Jeff Goldsmith.
Did he write Valkyrie?
He wrote Valkyrie, yes. Now, I want to take you down a little path because, you know, with these Mission Impossible films, it's kind of incredible. There's no script. Like, they're making this up as they go along. They kind of have ideas. They have locations. They have an idea or an impression of a big stunt that they want to do. With that chase thing, he knew he was chasing someone, but not really sure who he was chasing and why he was chasing, you know, Henry Cavill or whatever. And that's the kind of the case in how they make these big, humongous films. They're kind of making it up as they go along. And it's a little bit of a callback to to Harrison Ford and the quote you had earlier in this episode where you said, you know, I'm making this up as I go. And what Tom Cruise, when you rewatch Fallout, right? Tom Cruise is literally making it up as he goes along. And he says, when he's put under pressure and he's improvising, he literally is saying, I'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. I'll figure it out. You know, it's always a case of, we're going to figure this out.
That's great.
Let me tell you, right? I'm going to give you this story because it's worth, if you can, I'm going to put a link in. I don't know how we're going to do links to interviews and stuff like that. But
we can put it in the show notes.
Let's do that. We'll put a link in the show notes of this of Chris McQuarrie's interview by Jeff Goldsmith. But what's amazing about Chris McQuarrie is that he started off his career he went to school with Bryan Singer, but he also went to school with Ethan Hawke. Did you know this?
I did not.
So the first film that Bryan Singer made was a story adapted by Chris McQuarrie, or written by Chris McQuarrie, starring Ethan Hawke. And this was like a high school film that they made together.
They went to high school together?
Yes, they're in the same high school. Yes.
Did Chris McQuarrie grow up in Hollywood then?
No, New Jersey.
Wait, so the three of them know each other from New Jersey? That's unreal. I grew up on the same street as Jonathan Rhys Meyers. And when Jonathan Rhys Meyers became a big deal actor, I thought, I'm screwed. That's it. All the luck has gone under the terrace. It's never going to happen for me. So,
a rising tide raises all boats. That's the way you have to look at it.
Exactly.
And what's okay, there were some nuggets that he gave in this story, and I kind of have to get into it, is that first of all, so they collaborated pretty early on. Their kind of careers have kind of crisscrossed, and I know Bryan Singer is a bit of a murky kind of category.
Keep it positive. Actually, but don't just there's no point in putting a positive spin on that.
Where I want to get to is how Chris McQuarrie how his career has kind of in the early days, how it manifested and how he kind of got his gigs going. And do you know the backstory of how The Usual Suspects came about? Because Chris McQuarrie famously wrote The Usual Suspects.
Yeah, there was something to do with a hooker in a trunk. And I have no idea. Tell me.
Well, you're actually so close to the truth. No, it's actually like a Japanese mafia. No, it's actually not. What happened was, it's nuts, right? So anyway, Bryan Singer's first film was, he basically got money from this Japanese company for $250,000. It could have been the Yakuza. It could have easily have been to make this film, Local Access, right? Written by Christopher McQuarrie. Like, they were literally making it up as they went along. Turned out that film actually sold pretty well. And Brian and the same guys said to them, hey, why don't you make another film? So what had happened was at Sundance, when they were showing their first film, Public Access, I think it was called, Christopher McQuarrie had seen a headline that read The Usual Suspects. And he went, oh, that's a good title for a film. You know, that would be interesting. And he kind of just went Usual Suspects, and he just had a title headline, you know, like a slug line, and forgot all about it. Then when the Japanese investors basically said to Bryan Singer, we want to make your next film, Bryan Singer said, okay, I've got a script for you. He rang Chris McQuarrie and he said, that film idea you had, The Usual Suspects, I need a script, you know, in 2 weeks. And Chris McQuarrie was working in like a legal firm, and he just went, oh shit, oh, what the hell am I going to do? And he literally was like staring into a photocopy machine like all day long. So he had 3 days. Bryan Singer was basically saying, come, I'll be back. We meet up in 3 days. Pitch me the story or give me the story. So he said, I've got 3 days to come up with this. And he was sitting in his office, not knowing what to do. And he was looking around at the chalkboard, and he started to pick and pluck like different bits of information. Like, for instance, like one of his co-workers was a Kaiser Soze or something like that. And he actually went, that's kind of a cool villain name. I'm going to change that to Kaiser Soze. And then he came up with other little things. Basically, he hobbled together this idea, like all the elements for, you know, the facts of his story from just by looking around the break room of his office. And he came up with this idea of like, hang on a second, what if this was an interrogation in this room? And he literally just imagined the final scene of the film.
So are you saying that he pulled it all out of his ass?
All out of his ass. And 3 days later, Bryan Singer, he sits down with Bryan Singer and he says, I've no script for you. I've no idea what the story is, but I've got the final scene. And this is the final scene. And he pitched him the end of the movie. And he went, this is the end of the movie. And Bryan Singer said, brilliant.
Can I say controversially that I don't like The Usual Suspects for the simple reason that the story gets summed up as the equivalent of, it was all a dream. So, you know, when you're paying attention and you feel like where does this scene go? Where does that scene go? And you get to the end and it's like, well, none of it goes anywhere. It's just all gobbledygook. And I found that to be a bit of a cheat, but that's a bit negative. And films are fun.
But Kevin, that's exactly, you hit the nail on the head.
But he won an Academy Award for that, didn't he?
Yeah, he was making it up as he went along. Like he literally said, we'll figure it out.
That's what we need to do, is just pull it out of our ass, make it up as we go along, and we win an Academy Award. We just need to be friends with Ethan Hawke.
It's incredible. Now, but isn't it amazing? Like, he literally, Chris McQuarrie said in this interview, I heard him say, because I re-listened to that interview today, and he said, he literally said the line, we'll figure it out. And I watched Fallout last night, and I heard Tom Cruise say multiple times in the film Fallout, we'll figure it out. But it's incredible that Chris McQuarrie went through a bit of a doldrum phase in his career, where he at one stage he was packing his bags and leaving Hollywood for good, and he said he just couldn't do it anymore, being stuck in development
what
hell.
What part of his career was this?
This was basically after Way of the Gun went down.
After
incredibly,
Way of the Gun?
Yeah. He wrote and directed The Way of the Gun. It all the response
he
to
was
that
doing,
was absolutely
like,
terrible.
He was doing so much script doctoring work, though.
He was doing, but he said it was completely soulless. He said it was, they were golden handcuffs, he said. He was actually he was burning through money. He was never getting, he was kind of stuck in, he literally described it as golden handcuffs.
That's surprising. So he came back then with Jack Reacher?
No, it was before that. He had an Alexander the Great film that he was going to do. He had a John Booth film that he was going to do, John Wick's Booth. And his Alexander the Great film he was going to do with Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio. But that fell through. Where was it? Oh, yeah. So it was basically Valkyrie was a project that he had written Valkyrie and put it in a drawer. And he'd co-written it with another dude.
And he never gave Tom Cruise a running scene in that.
There was no Tom Cruise. And that's why it flopped. That Valkyrie flop, because there was no running scene. And that was the making of their relationship as well, because it's by all accounts, it sounded like, you know, they just clicked and they got on really well. And, you know, it was basically, it restarted Christopher McQuarrie's career in a huge way. He made the Jack Reacher films and have you seen Valkyrie?
I have, yeah. It was fine.
I thought it was entertaining.
Anything negative about it? I thought it was fine.
Yeah, but what I find fascinating about it is that ethos of "we'll figure it out" has kind of perfectly led him up to this perfect state, being the perfect man to helm the series of films that are just being figured out as they go along. So that's my whole spiel on Tom Cruise Run.
That was brilliant. Absolutely staggered that you managed to get 40 minutes out of that topic. And it was, for all the facts about Tom Cruise, that was brilliant. I really genuinely enjoyed that. That was so good.
But now we have to move on to the business of next week. And the lucky, well, because we're kind of like shifting our formula and our format around a little bit, this is the moment usually in the show where we would spin the wheel to reveal the topic for next week. And right now I should be spinning the wheel for Kevin, but because we've kind of shifted some of our format around a little bit to make it a bit easier on ourselves and give him more room to have a bit of crack, we actually already did
and
this.
And do so, crack.
But we did, so we actually spun the wheel last week, so we're just going to play a clip right now of me spinning the wheel for Kevin, and here we go.
You're gonna love this. Wait till you hear what I got.
What question is, what are we going to do next week? I'm spinning for you first.
Yes, you are, and then I'm spinning for you.
Okay, so. Are you ready? So I'm going to start spinning the wheel now. Spinning, it's incredibly loud. Here we go. The tension is building.
Fingers crossed.
And Kevin, you're...
Don't laugh.
This is going to be one. Oh, this is funny. So your topic for next week is best sex scene.
Off of...
Well, listen.
Oh my God.
I'll give you a suggestion. Team America, World Police.
There we
That's
go.
A good one.
You've no edit this out. Edit that out.
It's like, oh god, best sex scene. How do you? Oh my god. So listen.
Well, now we know that you're not going to get that.
So Kevin, we're back. You got best sex scene. Are you looking forward to it?
I am pupescent.
Pupescent. That sounds like something
that's a
you
word
have to
that
shave.
I've only ever read and I've never actually said aloud.
Pupescent. But, oh,
yeah,
god.
Google that afterwards.
Oh you, god,
it might be a bit rude.
It sounds like something you have to shave.
No, that's I just said it wrong. It's not pubescent. I am tumescent.
Oh. Hello. You're gonna have to write that in the chat to me. Well.
Oh god.
It's gonna be so much fun. Kevin's dying. It's okay.
I am raging for next week. I can't wait. I have been looking at a lot of naughty scenes, and I have to say I've really enjoyed it.
I don't know why. I couldn't imagine.
You'll have to get into it next week. So, yeah, I have lots of research to do, and I'm going to be very diligent. I'm going to make sure I see everything. I want to see it all. I don't want to miss any bit of it.
Your internet search history will make for, you know, interesting reading. That's a, you know, that's all I can say.
You'll have to use that clip from Patrick Stewart in Extras where he says, she covers up, but I saw everything. I saw it all.
Well.
Okay, well.
We can close it on that
week,
one.
Then.
Back next week. That was a fun show. And I am looking forward to being
titillated. You know,
and taught the facts of life through the lens of Kevin Lehan's best sex scene.
It's going to be filthy.
Right, good luck.
See you. Wait. Where can people find you, Will?
Well, I suppose people can find me on Twitter and my under at WillemsFilm, which is WillemsFilm. WillemsFilm on Twitter. Where can people find you, Kevin?
They can find me also on Twitter at BestBitsPod, or which is going to be our official Twitter handle, or they can just click on the link in the bio and it's at Kevin Lehan. But yeah, we're on Twitter, so follow us.
Great. Right, good luck.
And here is a clip from the lad's latest Mini Bits bonus show. The full episode plus 100 more are available on their Patreon.
Play dumb and stupid.
Two fun guys. Two fun
So what's the story, Kevin? It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. You've got news. Tell us your news. Hello, everybody. This is Kevin, and I'm joined by Will, and this is Minibit 72, just in case we didn't say so. I wonder what theme tune I'll put at the beginning of this. I've recorded so many of them. I usually just take my pick. Will I go for the egotistical one, or the epic one, or the 80s synthwave one, or the cowboy and western one? We'll see. Depends on the mood of this mini bits.
Okay. I'm looking forward to hearing which one it is. I'm curious because you said to me, you've got news.
Yeah.
And I'm like going, what fucking news do I have?
You nearly died during the week.
That
is pretty monumental.
There it is. There's me dying right there on mic. Yeah, I almost died. Yeah, I almost died.
Because of the Discord.
It was the Discord, yeah. It was the Discord's fault.
What happened? Tell me what happened.
Yeah.
Because we haven't actually spoken in about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
since the Irish recording, the Irish episode recording, we haven't been on mic together. Do you want to talk about this? We can cut it out if you don't want to.
I do want it to be at the front of, you know, the way we have this, you know, the tag.
We'll save that.
So I'll talk about it later. I'll talk about it later in the episode. You know, we can talk about something else, but I'm quite happy to put it later for our special people.
Okay. Well, listen, I saw these questions on TikTok during the last few weeks, and I thought, those are good questions. I'm going to make a note of them. I'm going to ask Will some of them. So I've got about five of them here. They're quite philosophical.
Okay.
And maybe if I ask you one as the teaser of this episode, and then we can pepper out the other one. Right. See how you get on.
Okay.
So give me from one to five, a number from one to five.
Go. Let's go five. Let's go all five.
Question five. If you could, would you rather spend a day with your younger self or your older self? Take your time.
No.
It's live radio.
This is a Back to the Future question.
Right? Is it?
Am I talking to my older self and my older self going, hey kid, bet on the Sox?
Would you sooner meet up with your older self and get the wisdom of your older self to say to you what you probably need to hear now, which is get a shift on, get a wiggle on? Or would you sooner go back to your younger self and say, listen, that thing that you're worried about, or that thing that you don't do and you should have done, you know, give him a pointer or some sort of a steer. So it's whether you want
is
the steer
it going to work
or do you
out?
Want to give your younger self a steer. Forgetting about the ramifications and the consequences. Forget all the sort of the grandfather paradox. For those that don't know what the grandfather paradox is, go back to our time travel episode.
Yeah. All right. I think I'll go back to my younger self, right? And I'll say, you know, I'll ask my younger self, come here, what's the big worry? What are you worried about? And
you should know that.
Well, I'm
going
to ask.
Don't you remember what you were worried about?
But the specific thing, because I worry about so many things. You know, we all worry about various different things, you know, from, you know.
Losing your Spider-Man shoes.
Yes. I'm going to go, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Because guess
what? Content.
Next week, you're going to have Batman. You're going to have Batman willies.
Also,
right?
In the future, there's a thing called a podcast, and you'll be able to tell people what happened to your Spider-Man shoes on the podcast.
Exactly. It's all the bad shit that's happening to you will be, it's filling you up, and it will be good content. That's all it is. All that embarrassing stuff that you do is going to be all right, as long as you don't be too much of a prick. And just stay the course. That's kind of it.
I'd be the opposite.
No, I think I would have a nice little sit down.
You'd have what? A nice shit?
I'd have a nice sit down and a nice little chat with myself. That's what I would do. How would you do? You're saying you would do the opposite.
I'd do the opposite. I'd want to speak to my future self because I can enact whatever they tell me. So I can, you know, live in the moment. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to know. I'd like foresight. Tell me what is coming towards me or what I need to be aware of. And I will make the change now because I can. Going back to my younger self, I would just be unburdening my younger self. And then, I don't know, hoping that that would change the course of my life. But I'm very happy with my life. I think everything's turned out fantastic. So I wouldn't want to risk changing anything. So yeah.
Honestly, that was my first thought as well. I was like going, yeah, I want all the information my older self can give me. And but I was like, I'll go back and I'll kind of help my younger self out a little bit.
When you hit 65, your prostate is going to blow up like a basketball.
Yeah. I didn't want to talk to my older self because what if my oldest self is 37? You know, I only live, you know, another 2 years. Obviously, by saying that, I'm implying I'm 35 right now.
I was going to say, I was like getting confused there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I said I needed to put some clarity on that one. I would be afraid for my older self to come back and my older self go, come back and I see the state of him and I go, oh shit, just one look at my older self and go, oh fuck no.
Listen, I just had the camera angled wrong there when I turned on the webcam here and that's already rattled me. I'm like, oh God.
You should never have the camera pointed at your balls, Kevin. Never, ever, ever, ever.
That's how I make a living. $5.99 a month. Well, listen, that'll do as a teaser. Yes, go on. Thank you to everybody that's listened to the latest episode, which we haven't recorded yet, and I hope it was a good episode, because I have no fucking clue what I'm going to talk about on that episode. But we've already done it now, because you've heard us talking about it. But also, this might be one of the random episodes. So, this is the Patreon. We do the mini bits. Come along. They're great episodes. We're going to keep talking, though. See ya.
Fuck them.
Yeah, fuck that.
Fuck that. Bye.